I'm here right now, Marina Hossa. I'm watching Marina Hossa literally embracing the Bellagio fountains. After our recording at the National Association of Black Journalists, National Association of Hispanic Journalists conference in Las Vegas. Now, the one thing people need to know is that if you're an In the Thick fan, as Maria celebrates the fountains, we were here in 2020.
Doing the same thing.
Doing the same thing.
Oh my God, wait.
Right?
Woo!
And that was when we thought, oh, this is going to be a great year.
Oh,
and next thing you know, the pandemic happened, and here we are. Hi, Maria.
And right on cue, the music ends. It is so crazy to be back here, Julio.
Isn't it?
I'm sorry that you all just had to deal with me going crazy about the water show, but I love these things. But here we are, recording in the thick.
We are literally in front of the Bellagio on the Strip. It's a beautiful weekend afternoon. It's hot, but we're under a nice shade, right? And we just finished this incredible live recording that featured
incredible people.
People like White House correspondent for CBS News, Ed O'Keefe, and the fabulous Lori Montenegro, who's the Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for Noticias Telemundo.
We really had an amazing time because we invited journalists who are very, very deep into the mainstream, which is a part of our lives. And we're so not the mainstream, but we believe that journalists of conscience have to have these conversations.
Yeah.
And that's why we brought everybody together. And you know how many times I've been stopped since we've been here in Las Vegas at the National Association of Black Journalists and Hispanic Journalists Conference? People saying that conversation you had about the politics of Latinos and Latinas and the responsibility that we have and how we have to talk about our political power and our complexity. So people really appreciate that we talk politics on In the Thick.
Yeah.
And they like it when we do it live in front of an audience.
I know, and it was interesting, but I we're going to share, like, this is a special episode. We're going to share, obviously, the live conversation, but now that we're kind of post-gaming it, because, you know, here we are doing the intro after the live. So what thoughts really resonated with you from that conversation that you kind of took away with you that...
You know what I love, and I think that In the Thick and our... You, dear listener, are such a part of this because you've given us this freedom, is that we can talk with this group of journalists, the most serious political journalists, Latino journalists, English and Spanish media. But what also really matters to them and us, right, is this deep emotional connection to what we do.
Yeah, yeah.
Deep emotional connection. I mean, you and I talk about our emotional connection. That's what we do on In the Thick, right?
Sorry, I'm alive.
But to have Lori Montenegro.
Yeah.
We're not going to reveal what happened,
no,
but it was a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And to have Ed O'Keefe going into a deep personal moment.
Ooh, yeah.
I think that's what really stays with me, is that this just profound responsibility to talk about these really important, difficult, challenging topics.
Yeah.
But that we give space to our journalists to show their heart.
Yeah, I have to say a couple of things about that, really, my impressions of the live event. And first of all, big shout out to our producers, Noor Saudi
and Harsha Nahanda,
who
just
Perez.
Like, Raul Perez, who was helping us here. Yeah.
And Hector Luis Alamos here. He's based in Las Vegas.
Our team here is killing it. So, yes.
And it was really, if you're a fan of In the Thick, you know that we've done several live events. But this was like our first, as they say in the business, our first lunch event. So, like, people were actually having lunch while we started the show. And when you're going through as a co-host live, you're like, okay, I feel like, you know, we're like the headliner here while people are eating lunch. Are they going to pay attention to us? And it was interesting because once they realized that this was a live podcast recording and what we were talking about, it went from like people eating their salads to complete silence in the room. And I just thought that spoke to what makes this show special, is exactly what I got the impression as well, is that, you know, these two amazingly accomplished journalists who have covered it all can be themselves with us. And with not revealing too much, I think, you know, just enjoy it. Any last, before we toss, Maria? I mean, you look great against the Bellagio setting.
I don't know. I'm feeling, it was very important for this group of journalists, Black journalists and Latino and Latina journalists, to be together in person. And I feel really grateful and privileged that we have the opportunity to be here and have these conversations. So I think we throw it to the show, dear listener.
Yeah, let's get to it with Lori and Ed. The first part of this live in the thick from Las Vegas.
From Las Vegas. And the fountains at the Bellagio. Woo!
Uno, dos, tres!
Hey, from Futuro Media and PRX, it's In the Thick, a podcast about politics, race, and culture. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. And welcome to In the Thick in Las Vegas from Caesar's Palace.
We are so happy to be live with our fellow journalism peers. This is really, really exciting. We're at the 2022 NAHJ Convention's Newsmakers Luncheon, and we're going to be talking politics because, you know, if you know me, you know I love talking politics, and I don't think we Latinos and Latinas talk enough about it. And we're specifically going to talk about what our role as journalists is as we cover politics and Latinos and Latinas. So we have two amazing guests with us who I love and admire for their journalism. Lori Montenegro is the Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for Noticias Telemundo, a proud Afro-Latina, one of my sheroes. I love Lori Montenegro. And Ed O'Keefe is senior White House and political correspondent for a little network named CBS News. So I love the both of you. And I know that we're very respectable. I mean, look at Ed with his pink tie, seriously.
Yeah, I like it, Ed. Nice look.
Fabulous look. But we really want each other to interrupt.
Yeah.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
I am obsessed with the data and the story around Latinos and Latinas and political power, like you all.
Yeah.
We know that in the last census, Latinos and Latinas accounted for half of the population growth, of the total population growth.
We like to have babies.
We like getting it on.
We like to have babies.
We like getting it on. I actually, can we get a round of applause for that?
How's that for interrupting?
Okay, journalists don't like getting it on.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are like, let's Vegas crowd.
Apparently, journalists do not like to have babies.
I don't understand what's going on here. So the question is, we are talking about this major political voice because Latinos and Latinas, this is my obsession, we are the second largest voting cohort in the United States. Not a block, but a cohort. But we're also incredibly complex. Yes, hello.
Yeah, there we go. A little reaction. Yes.
Step
back there for a second. Not
They're
a block.
They're applauding. That's
They're
right.
They're listening.
Thank you to the table in the middle for the applause.
Someone around it drinks for that table. Let's do
yes.
it.
Yes. So how, and we're going to start with you, Lori. How do we...
Here we go.
Here we go.
Oh.
How do we acknowledge the fact that we have this immense political power? But, you know, most of our colleagues who are not Latinos and Latinas are always surprised by us. Just like, oh my God, Latino voters, what? So how do we do both? Recognize our political power and also say, yes, huge, but incredibly complex. And can we begin to break it down?
I think we start by, in our own broadcast entities, you know,
Okay. We
need to play it up. We need to have more coverage of politics. We need to understand that we do play a role in educating people and bringing them into the mainstream. So
I like it. This crowd's getting it now. That's it. I like it.
Yes. And we also, you know, have to go out there and pressure not only the legislators, not only the politicians that are running, but we need to pressure the parties to acknowledge that. In some instances, I can tell you by buying political ads on Hispanic networks. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't invest the same thing they invest in English. I'm going to say it just like that. We don't get the same amount of investment in Hispanic media. So it's a challenge. I think we have made inroads, but we're not near where we should be.
Oyeme, Ed, I don't live in Washington, D.C., and this stuff keeps me up at night. You know, and it's like, do they not get it? Not only the parties.
Do they want to get it? I think they get it. They just don't want to get it.
Okay, so.
Do they want to get it?
I think they do. I just think that there can be a cyclical aspect to it. That there is more attention focused on it every 2 years in different ways and not constantly. And I think that can be said about a lot of different things that we cover and a lot of different aspects of American society. But, you know, I actually think we're about to enter the most important cycle for Latino politics probably this century, because you have suddenly seen...
Whoa, that's a big... Wait,
well,
that's
a
big...
Wait.
That's a big one.
What did you say?
We are potentially entering the most important or interesting political cycle for Latinos this century, because you notice there's been this uptick in interest in Latinos, especially among Republicans.
Yes.
Believing that they're able to siphon off even small percentages.
Correct.
Across the country.
And they're working very hard at it.
And they're working
they're really working hard at it.
And I think what it's finally going to do is prove what Lori and I, Maria, all of us, have been trying to tell colleagues, friends, neighbors, and the campaigns we cover, that Latinos are not a monolith. And if it's suddenly scrambled in a bigger way, it's going to force investment and better micro-targeting and better spending on...
Dude, pero al mismo tiempo, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we did say it was an interruption.
Yes.
I'm thinking about the fact that I was covering politics for CNN in the year 2000.
Yeah.
And we were doing that exact story, and we were telling that exact, that same narrative. And here we are 20 years later, 22 years later,
yeah.
Right? And it's still like, I'm stuck with what Lori just said.
What's that?
Do they want to get it? This is some scary stuff.
But I do think it's the question, and one of the things that I say when you say Latinos are not a monolith, or are they going to get it? This is not going to change until political operatives understand that we are kind of like swing states,
mm-hmm.
in the sense of like swing states in this country have power.
Right.
Like New Hampshire guys, I mean, I'm from New England. I mean, New Hampshire has political power as opposed to, say, Texas in a lot of ways, in terms of what shapes the elect, at least the narrative of major elections. So that to me is like the big thing. And my question is, stick with this, Lori. Like, why don't they want to get it, Lori? Tell us now.
Lori's like, uh-oh.
Listen, we're having an honest conversation.
Yes, we are.
And I want to be transparent with everyone.
Yeah.
I think we all need to understand that there are people in this country who are scared of...
Cambio.
El cambio. O sea, they're scared of minorities being the largest population in this country. And so they will do any and everything to maybe block that, or como decimos en español, tapar el sol con un dedo.
Yeah.
Also, listen, I think I'm going to just leave it at that. We'll just leave it at that. But I think everybody in the room understands what I'm saying here.
But this is
here.
Really
not,
scary, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, thank you.
They understand
you for the
it.
Applause for Lori and her transparency.
Very nice.
But it's also obviously terrifying, right? Because I've been watching Lori do national politics for so many years, that you have someone at this caliber just saying they're afraid of change. And it's like, wow, are we still on this ridiculously bullshit narrative? And by the way, para toda transparency, and you know I love you, at Futuro Media, we never use the word minority. Ever. Ever. Because I don't see myself as that.
And it's a good point. I mean, it's a label.
It's a label.
And we shouldn't be looking at each other as a label. We are, you know, in this country, American citizens, some that have been here 3-4 generations, who are contributing at all levels of society, in government, in business,
yeah.
et cetera. So, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. We should get away from even saying in news, maybe we need to discuss that. No decir minorías.
Eso, mira, por favor.
Well, we're on that campaign.
Think about it on your newsroom
yeah.
also.
But
yes.
Ed, in terms of, you know, the work that you've been doing, the question that Maria and I always ask ourselves a lot is the narratives that are coming out of the political discourse, particularly with our communities, we tend to say, you know, that there are certain narratives that are just like go-to, you know, whether it's like immigration or demographics or let's go to South Texas, you know, and all of a sudden South Texas, which has not gotten a lot of attention nationally over the years, all of a sudden everyone wants to go to the Rio Grande Valley to find out what, and be like shocked that Latinos have political differences, right? Like, oh my God, did you grow up in my Puerto Rican family? Like, duh. But with that said, what is being missed? You know, and you're covering it now. You did the campaigning and now you're, you know, at the White House. What do you think is being missed? If Ed O'Keefe could be like, these are the things that I really,
he's a
really,
boss man. But I know,
that's what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? But if you could really like dive into
okay,
the...
déjalo hablar ya.
Okay, yeah.
Well, oh, and let me... Thank
oh,
you.
Lori. Nice one.
Did you see that?
I like it.
Can I give my PSA that I have to give because the perception of some people in this room is about to change when I say this? There's about 55% of you in here going, why the hell is an Irishman up here? So let me explain, as I often do in these mixed settings. My dad is from the Berkshires of Massachusetts, pero mi mamá es de Guatemala.
Ah, el país de la eterna primavera.
Okay. And you went to Guatemala to cover, you interviewed the president of Guatemala, right?
Guatemala, and tried to pigeonhole the vice president while she was there. And
right.
Didn't get that interview that she got with that other guy at that other network. We tried.
Ooh, I like
we are a competitive bunch.
They have mentioned, hey, how cool would it be to interview... would be interviewed by a Guatemalan in Guatemala, but it didn't seem to resonate in the White House, so...
Wow.
And look what interview she got, and look how much trouble she got into, so whatever, but...
But answer the question now.
So, what would I do differently?
No, what are you thinking? Oh,
what are you thinking
missing?
Is being missed? Or
is missing.
You see, I was going to continue the question, Lori, but then you...
But Lori got you.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I just... I think the way it's missing, and I know some in here are not necessarily going to think this is enough, but I think it, part of it is just, you know, don't just book the Latinos to talk about immigration. Find me a Latino doctor who can talk about COVID, okay?
Right.
Don't just assign Latinos to cover Los Angeles and Miami and Houston. Put them on the north lawn of the White House. Because when they're in the briefing room, they're going to end up asking different questions that force the White House to think about how they explain things and when they explain things differently.
Yeah.
I can think, for example, remember when they sent people down to Venezuela suddenly to try to get those Sitco 6 back?
Yeah.
And they were being kind of not terribly direct about what was going on.
Shocking.
I spent 3 days from the front row of the room asking questions about Venezuela, and I could see the White House press secretary and her aides kind of going... Why is CBS asking about Venezuela? It's not like it's going to be on the evening news tonight. I was asking it because I know there were people in the back of the room who are never going to get called on who needed an answer. And so there was
solidarity.
An ability.
That's important. This is really important.
There was an ability from the front row to ask some things sooner and in a more prominent way and on camera that they were never going to get an answer to. And I did it the first day out of sheer curiosity, because it was interesting that they were doing this.
Yeah.
But as I walked back to our office in the back of the room, I got stopped by 3 or 4 reporters from Venezuelan or Colombian or Spanish language television outlets who said, thank you so much for asking. I said, what do you mean? They go, we're never going to get an answer unless someone like you is asking.
Yeah.
And I
so
want to
part
jump
of it
in
is
here.
In the hiring and then the people you put in those positions knowing that priorities should be a little different or the questions that are on your list have to reflect perhaps a different, broader set of concerns. Even if they don't make your air, you got to be asking those things.
Lori.
Before I interrupt you, Lori, I just really want to recognize what Ed did there.
Yeah.
Because as journalists who are all here together, as colleagues, this is journalistic solidarity. Because we're a competitive bunch. You know that. Mm-hmm. We'll smack each other down. Mm-hmm. We will. For a story, but at the same time, this kind of collegiality, la verdad, mis respetos, Ed. Perdón, Lori.
Yeah, give it up,
no,
Ed.
You know what? And Telemundo has been one of those networks that has benefited when we have somebody in the first two rows that will ask the question.
Yeah.
We have been covering stories that we need a response to, and we're not there in the briefing room, and the briefing will be over, and we'll be like, I can't believe no one asked that question. But what I wanted to say was, how presumptuous for any White House official, be it at the State Department, be it wherever, and hopefully I pray that they're not thinking, why is that particular network asking that question? Listen, networks are full of different platforms right now. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't air on, you know, CBS Nightly News at 6:30 or any other network, it may make some other platform because that information is, you know, it's important. It's news.
Yeah.
It's timely. And so that is the other issue. They just presume that networks sometimes just are pigeonholed into a, you know, news of the day, and that nobody's going to be thinking about the other news that is happening that we may not be paying attention to, but our community is paying attention to.
Well, it's also they try to prioritize what they'd like to talk about. So by being able to just say, oh, we don't have anything for you on it, they hope that it kind of gets shoved aside and not worried about it until tomorrow. That's a strategy, whether you agree with it or not. And is it working for them? Well,
they got some issues.
But, you know, Maria, we were talking about one issue that I think as political journalists, we might have missed at Futuro.
And I think this is part of what we're trying to do, is have a really smart conversation about the politics and how we cover those politics. And I do like to acknowledge when I meto la pata. Not that I metí la pata that big, but I do. I can't believe. Thank you for the laughter.
People are laughing.
Like, that was some serious, like, code switching, and I didn't mess it up. Okay. I don't think, in terms of what we were missing,
yeah,
I don't think I correctly understood the level at which Latinos and Latinas are locked into the anti-abortion issue. Mm. And this is something that now, you know, as this crazy reality, but I just do like to acknowledge that, again, we all need to be, we can all learn, and we're in the process of learning about covering this complex community, which leads me to this question.
Yeah.
Because I just got back from North Dakota.
Yeah, North Dakota.
I was waiting for a response. I got laughter. Okay. How many of you know what's happening in North Dakota in terms of Latino population growth? I see one hand.
It's pretty big, right?
Yeah.
So the Latino population growth in North Dakota is the largest percentage growth in the entire United States.
In the last 10 years. Since
in the last 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And in one area, they say it was 1,000%. So I know what?
That's like 1,000 Latinos show up, like one white dude from North Dakota, and they're like, what?
But
like,
that is literally
it's
what
happening.
Happened, though, right?
Yeah, because literally what happened.
Well, there were jobs suddenly.
Yeah.
All kinds of jobs.
Right.
But the point that I went into in terms of North Dakota is, so how much will Latinos and Latinas change the state? Mm. And how much will the state
change them?
Yeah.
And without revealing too much, because we're doing a two-hour documentary. That's why you listen to Latino USA. I know it. Is because I found many of the people who are moving from Texas or Arizona or where else, California, many of them were actually very conservative to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm like, so maybe they're not going to switch. They're not going to necessarily change the state, but the state is actually going to change them. Okay, that was just a piece of data. The question to you, I know you're like, wait, what's the segue? So the segue is this. We understand that, let's say if you happen to be a journalist, Latino or Latina journalist based in North Dakota or
Idaho,
Omaha or Kansas City or Birmingham or Seattle or Yakima, that it may be hard for you as a local journalist to get your story through. You know this, we get this complaint all the time. I'm in the newsroom and they're like, but you did a story on Latinos last week. Why do you want to do another one? So what is the piece of advice that you want to give? And I'll tell you what I say to my students. You need to go into the newsroom and understand the data that we're talking about, so that when you're talking about pitching stories about Latinos and Latinas, you're able to say, well, wherever, fill in the blank city, town where you're at, look at the Latino population growth, because it will be there everywhere. Talk about the census. Talk about the fact that the median age of Latinos and Latinas is 10 or 11.
Are you giving them the answer already? Or
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Ed?
Well, there was a good example of this just the other day, although it wasn't a local one, but I just think part of the way to tell these stories to make sure the Latino perspectives are being reflected. And this isn't to do it because you have that colleague who says, why are you telling this story again? But it's because if we are all one big country and we're not a M-word minority, and you want to tell the American story, then if you're going to tell the story about the lack of affordable housing, you go find the Latino family who can afford that house. Don't just go find, you know, the 25-year-old single guy who can't afford an apartment. Go find the family. The New York Times did something, and I know it's the New York Times, not a local paper in Yakima or Omaha, but they went to, I believe it was Idaho.
Yeah.
And telling the stories of the people who work in the restaurants or who clean those massive ski resort homes, who are living behind blue tarps with no running water and no refrigeration. And it's families with kids. And this is happening in these parts of the country now with explosive population growth, which also happens to be explosive Latino population growth. So there are ways to be telling these stories that may not be, you know, Latino
centric.
Doesn't have to be.
But that show an American audience that this is an American problem.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, Latino centric is the United States of America.
And I think we just need to be intentional in the newsroom to go out and tell those stories.
What is intentional
to you?
Intentional
is, you know, okay, so we have population growth. We're just not going to go to California. If we're going to cover population growth, let's go to the place where the population growth, you know, is happening. So my colleagues are here at the Telemundo table.
Yeah, Telemundo table. Give it up, Telemundo table.
And you know what? I want to challenge them. I want to challenge them.
Enjoy your salad. And
here comes the Lori challenge.
There's several very good storytellers at that table. And I'm not going to call them out by name. But I think, you know, listen, Hispanic Heritage Month is coming up.
Yeah.
And so why don't we, you know, look at a different way to highlight what our community has accomplished or not accomplished. You know, sometimes we just fall into this thing, I think, where we just go and cover, the businessman that came or crossed the border when he was 10 and he didn't know how to read and write. And look, today he owns 5,000 restaurants. That's all good. I'm not saying that that's bad, but our community is more than that. And that is the thing that I hope, you know, we can get out. So you're talking about North Dakota, correct?
North Dakota.
Okay, so Telemundo. Dakota del Norte. Kevin, I don't know if we have a station there. I don't know what we have there, but find out what's there and let's go there.
Oh, and we got contacts because, you know, and so does Ed. Like, we're all there.
Getting results.
I have a little bit of news to share regarding that. In fact, I don't think you know this, but I'm part of your family. Lori's like...
What family?
Lori's like, wait, we have a tía? Yes, we do have a tía that we share. Just kidding.
I was going to say Montenegro. Yes, Montenegro.
Hinojosa, Montenegro. No, I have just signed on to become a contributor at MSNBC.
Yes! Yeah. Very good. Very good. Awesome.
You know what?
You weren't already?
What? No, I wasn't.
No, she wasn't already.
But you're right.
No, I didn't really want another job. But I believe that all of us here, we have decisions to make about how we understand our role. So when I understood that my relationship of journalism in this country goes all the way back to Frederick Douglass, right?
Wow.
That we are part of a trajectory of journalists of conscience in this country. Yo, I'm talking about serious historical responsibility for what we do. Entonces, I didn't need another job because I'm Mexican. I have 16 already. But I felt like we have to talk about the political power of our community. O si no, democracy is just...
But the point of the question I have, because you decided, you actively said, this is a mission. So as we navigate, because, you know, you have seen this. I mean, you're getting the same questions that you were asked probably, you know, 10, 15 years ago. How are we all going to try to change? I mean, you already challenged Telemundo, so I think you already answered the question about challenging journalism, but how do we continue to challenge while still, you know, doing the work? Challenge sort of this notion of what we're trying to, like, I wouldn't say deconstruct, but almost in a way disrupt it.
What are we challenging, our colleagues, or?
Well, what are you challenging? What do you feel like
you as
you're
a journalist?
Like,
as you go in, what are you?
Well, I mean, again, I think it's asking questions like the ones I asked over those few days that kind of surprised them at first. It's also, frankly, it's little things. It's calling out, for example, out in LA when we went to cover the mayor's race, we actually did a story on this for our morning show. Because they thought it was interesting that in this big city, you have a former Republican,
right,
Caruso. And I said to them repeatedly, I said, if you're going to tell the story of why this guy is winning, we need to include in the piece clips of his Spanish and Korean language advertising that has been blanketing Los Angeles, because he's everywhere. And he knows that in order to win a race like this, he's got to convince Latinos and Asians and other populations in order to win. So it's having those little conversations where you say, you're going to take 6 seconds out of this piece to run a clip of that Spanish ad. It's putting experts in your pieces you know, who are Latino, who aren't necessarily just there to talk about immigration.
Any more challenges?
Those are the little
you?
Way, and it's just if you can do that over and over again consistently,
yeah,
little by little, you are challenging things and you are changing things.
Yeah.
You know, I think also a lot of it has to do with introductions. You know, while Ed was speaking, I was just remembering that I met a young girl. I've known her for years. She's out in Texas. She does things with climate. And there was somebody from MSNBC who was a booker.
Yeah.
And I said, you two need to meet and you
need
to talk. Okay.
That's how it happens.
Because, you know, number one concern for Latinos is climate change. They're concerned about the places where they live,
right.
What's going on with contamination, you know, their water supply. And so we have experts who are Latinos who understand that issue and who can be on air and talk and be just as well-versed as anybody else. So that's the way.
And they can do it bilingually.
And they can do it bilingually. Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of knowledge. But, you know, we got to, the way, if you're a fan of In the Thick, we like to end a little bit of asking questions. You know, we do binge worthy. We do, what's your mom's one? No bullshit.
No bullshit.
Right. But we've been kind of gravitating more to this segment about joy. Like what?
So I get asked this question a lot, right? So how do you do it? How do we continue to do it? And I just feel such a huge historical responsibility. By the way, when I started working with Suave, never thought we would win a Pulitzer. When I created Futuro Media 12 years ago, I was so terrified. It was so scary. And yet here we are, Peabody Pulitzer Award winning, doing things that we want to do the way we want to do it. But how do we keep ourselves motivated? How do we do this? Oyeme, especialmente, and we know this, when we have our families that are also very demanding of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you get the thing of, when you walk in the door, stop being Ed O'Keefe from CBS News and you're just papa?
Yeah. I remember a few years ago, we were having, I guess I was meeting with my wife and my sister, who wasn't married yet, didn't have kids yet. And I was asking her a bunch of questions, and she just kind of snapped them, and she goes, excuse me, I'm your sister, I'm not somebody you're interviewing.
Oh.
And it was a reminder, like, you know, yeah, leave the pen and pad and the microphone at the door, please, and just be Ed.
So what are the things that you do to find joy?
Yeah.
But also to give you esa fuerza de dale otra vez, Lori, porque por eso I wanted you here. Because Lori has been doing this for so long as an Afro-Latina in Washington, D.C., breaking all kinds of boundaries. You don't know how much I love her. And we're not hanging out with each other, but I adore her and everything that she represents. And you have taken on so many challenges, Mama. Oh, she's getting teary-eyed. I love this.
You know, So when you said, is it that you guys do that keep you going? What keeps me going is I don't have my parents anymore. They passed away. But it keeps me going that I'm the daughter of a man that never went to school. He never got the chance to go to kindergarten. And a mother that only finished the 8th grade. And they came to this country and they gave their all. That's what keeps me going. They may not be here with us on earth anymore, but I want my children to see que en este país, no importa what you're going through, it doesn't matter what the situation is, if you work hard, you can accomplish anything that you want to. Forget the naysayers. I was told very harsh things when I was starting in this business, but it's them. It's their memory, their sacrifice, the things that I saw them, you know, go through. They came to this country, the first restaurant where they went to in Key West, Florida, the man said, we don't serve blacks here. And my father asked my mother, where have you brought me to? And she said, olvídate de eso. Nosotros vamos a salir adelante. And they did. And I'm a... and I am a product of that. And every time I go through the gates of the White House, I remember Gilberto y Laura. And I say, ustedes ya no estarán aquí. But I never take for granted, one single sacrifice, one piece of advice, one scolding, todo lo castigo que me dieron, because, you know, I was
rebelde,
rebelde, malcriada.
Buen criada.
And so that's what keeps me going, and I'm going to kill you because you made me cry.
We made Lori Montenegro cry.
Wow.
You made us all cry, Mama.
I know, that was beautiful.
But you know what? I love that because I also feel like, que mi papá, I still have my mom, but que mi papá, que en paz descanse. I'm like, he's watching all of this. And he's like, because you know what freaked out my father the first time he crossed the border was that he, as un mexicano oscurito, had to say, wait, am I going into the bathroom for colored or for white? So our families, this connection to deep racism in this country is also what forms us. I love you, Lori. Okay, Ed.
So what brings
you joy?
You're
going to make us cry?
Oh, well, I might. Well, first of all, there's a little game I try to play with my three-year-old now where they were fortunate enough to come with me to New York a few weeks ago and hit something up there and hang out in the studio. And then they watch at home. And one day, my daughter says to me, Papa, I want to play with you. I said, okay. I said, what do you want to play? She goes, I want to play the news. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, good news and bad news. I said, well, what's the good news? And it was something like, we're going to the pool. And well, what's the bad news? Well, the bad news is the dog, you know, ate my stuffed animal or something.
There you go.
Every so often we play that, and it's just like she knows what I'm doing, and
I love it.
She understands what we're trying to convey. The other one was that I it didn't give me joy, but I think it gives me a little purpose. When I went to Guatemala with the vice president, it was the second time CBS had sent me to Guatemala to report on a vice president visiting. So I'd gotten two all expense paid trips to see family, or at least one way flights. And it was actually the third time I'd gone for work. The first was for the Washington Post when Rand Paul went down there years ago before he ran for president. And it was a dream come true to, you know, completely tap a part of your life and your background that colleagues know, readers could never comprehend because of my name, my byline, right? They don't know that Ed O'Keefe.
OKF.
Right.
Should be there, you know.
And I had convinced his staff to let us go. And I said, look, I'm from there. I know where you're going. I speak the language. I'll be able to color and contextualize why you decided to come here. And they said, well, let me come. But this last trip, nobody had been to Guatemala since the pandemic began. And the last time we were there was December 2019. And it meant we were there for 4 or 5 days. And we had enough of an afternoon that when I landed, I went straight to Antigua and I saw my abuelita. And I saw a bunch of uncles and aunts, and we went back to Guatemala City to do some work on Saturday. We came back to Antigua on Sunday, and I made them do the Sunday night news live on the streets of Antigua.
Yes!
Because right. I said,
sweet.
Not only are we in Guatemala, but I'm going to bring you to the one place in this town where I always thought it'd be really effing cool to do a live shot. And you know the Cayo del Arco? You've seen the yellow? All right, we did the CBS Sunday Night News from right there on the streets.
Well, there you go.
Awesome.
But here's the other thing. This is where it takes a turn. I left Guatemala knowing that my grandmother had contracted COVID. And she died not 2 weeks later. And so I was the last to have seen her in my immediate family up here in the United States. But I always think, you know, a lot of families, you got a guy who was a doctor, you're a doctor, or lawyer, you became a lawyer, or, you know, whatever. There was no journalist in my family, but there was a rabid news consumer, and it was my grandmother, my abuelita, who would read 4 newspapers a day, who knew everything, who would clip political cartoons in the Guatemalan newspapers for me, and then when I visited, she would give them to me, so I had them. So to know that the woman who probably most naturally, most genetically led to me being a journalist, then got to see me come not only cover the vice president of the United States, but question her, and then pigeonhole the Guatemalan president in front of the Guatemalan press who doesn't get to. You know what happened when I left? They wrote 2 articles in the Guatemalan news sites about este periodista guatemalteco americano que se llama Ed O'Keefe got to ask Yamate these questions that we never get to ask. And he asked him, you know, it was an Associated Press reporter in English who asked him, sir, could you please respond to the charges of corruption that the Biden administration has been making? And he ignored her question. And I got to ask the next one. And I said, señor, in Spanish, I said, por favor, dale una respuesta a este señor. And I did it in Spanish, and it was airing live across Guatemala, and he had to answer for it.
Solidarity.
All right. Give it up.
That's what gives me joy and purpose.
Give it up. Yo, we take this work seriously. We make choices. I know all of you are journalists of soul, heart, and journalists of conscience. And right now, this was a wrap for a fabulous conversation. Thank you so much to the NAHJ right in front of our live audience. So, we want to give a special thanks to everybody who helped plan this live recording. Special thanks to the NAHJ and to the sound team, the AV team from Encore, Patrick Melton, who engineered today's recordings.
And also an extra shout out to the In the Thick team, Noor and Harsha, who produced today's show.
Oh,
our associate producer, Lisa, for her support. And a big thanks to the Walton Family Foundation who made this live show possible.
Also, hello, Raul Perez, who makes everything happen. He's my son and he's my producer. He's right here. That's right. All right. Thank you so much to Ed O'Keefe, senior White House and political correspondent for CBS News, and Lori Montenegro, head of Noticia Telemundo's Washington, D.C. Bureau. Thank you so much for joining Julio and me on this episode of In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. Be out of here.
Hi, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of Latino USA. We all love great stories, and great stories are what we pride ourselves in delivering to you every week. Latino USA presents a mix of reporting on culture and politics, diverse voices, and coverage of current and emerging issues, featuring stories from the heart, stories that will make you think and maybe even inspire you. Listen to Latino USA on your favorite podcast app from PRX. So, wow. I mean, it was a pretty incredible conversation with Lori and Ed.
Yeah.
I mean, Julio, Lori in tears, Ed in tears. Like, that's why we love our journalists, you know, because they got heart.
You said, I remember you were like, you kind of were joking that they were going to cry, and the conversation led to such a real moment. And I was next to Lori, what she shared. And then Ed's story, just two great people. And so glad that they got to be themselves with us. I mean, I thought Ed opened up a little bit there about, you know, didn't get the vice president interview and he's the Guatemalan. So there were some really interesting takes.
You know, what was great about being at the National Association of Black Journalists and National Association of Hispanic Journalists co-conference, right, was that we were able to see so many of our colleagues, so many Latino and Latina journalists, Black journalists who are doing the hard work to cover our communities in nuanced and thoughtful ways. And of course, we talk about this as journalists of conscience, right? So during the convention, Julio, there were so many people, but we did split up because we wanted to talk to our colleagues who like are based in different parts of the country. And we wanted to get a chance to actually sit down and interview them. So we're going to share a couple of these moments with you, dear listener. And one of the journalists that I spoke to, Romelo Ojeda, is the community correspondent for Documented, right? Let's listen. How has your lived experience helped you be a better reporter? Because oftentimes it's seen as something that is, oh, you're too close to the story. It's actually made you, in your opinion, a better journalist. How?
So when I'm talking to immigrants, I know for a fact that they need to trust me 100% before I can start asking the difficult questions. And being an immigrant has allowed me to see where exactly I can start talking to them from. For me, it's always important to let them know that I am a person and that they are a person too that I respect. I try to make them as comfortable as possible. You know, when they don't speak a lot of English, for example. So I always use this phrase like, you know, usted sabe lo suficiente para protegerse, you know, o para defenderse, which is this thing that my mom used to use, and she would always laugh about it because it means like I know enough to protect myself or to defend myself. And usually that makes like, you know, the conversation go a lot more smoother because they feel comfortable. And then we start talking, we start laughing. But at the same time, you know, of course, I'm there to listen to their story, to ask the questions that are difficult to ask, keeping in mind that they're human. We got to understand them as human.
Yeah, that was really special. You know, I love seeing this new crop of journalists, Julio, who are like, you know, unafraid to be who they are. Such an important part of my life story as a journalist was like, you know, not always fitting in. So this was so much fun to get to know these young journalists who are kind of breaking the mold.
Yeah, I was privy to that interview because I was just in the room. I know we were doing other interviews throughout the conference, but that was a moment to watch the two of you interact. It was a special moment because Documented is such a great outlet. I love reading Documented and just to see the tradition. You know what I mean? Like, it was special. But, you know, like you said, we talked to a lot of people and we ran into a lot of people. And actually before our conversation with Lori and Ed, I sat down with a friend of Futuro who we both admire and love and respect, Yvonne Latti, who now is the director of the Logan Center for Urban Investigative Reporting at Temple University in Philadelphia. That's what's up.
Yes.
How do you approach these issues as a journalist? Because, you know, it's they're so big and I feel like we've talked about them forever, right?
I mean, for me, I base all my work right now on empathy and listening and caring about communities that have not been heard in the way that they want to be heard. So one of the things I'm thinking about a lot as I move forward with my career in this new job is how can I center their voices more and make sure that they're the lead of the story and not what I think of them or what I think it is. Because even though I share a lot of lived experiences with people of color, you know, I am not living in a neighborhood where there's gun violence every day. And although I experience serious health disparities with my mother's journey through Alzheimer's disease.
How does that help you understand? Because you did so much on that lived experience. And now here you're directing like this new program.
I mean, I think the really interesting thing about being an Afro-Latina, about being a Black woman, about being a woman who grew up in a lower income community with immigrant parents, there's so much that I understand about the struggles of BIPOC people right now and these communities. And I know that when I did the piece on my mom, how empowering it was for me to be able to tell my story.
Yvonne's the best. You know, she mentioned her story about her mom, and that became an award-winning podcast for Latino USA, Alzheimer's and Color, one of my favorite podcasts at Latino USA of the last couple of years. Maria, what did you think about Yvonne, what she was sharing? I mean, I'm such a big fan of her.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear a journalist of her stature to talk about empathy, you know, and to be and to be really kind of moving in the world as a journalist in a place like Philly, which is a city that's been through a lot now. And to I just love the fact that she's heading up what she's calling urban investigative reporting.
Yeah.
Because I also think that that's what's going to change. I mean, it's just such a great thing to see so many other kind of avenues to tell our stories about these communities that, by the way, are everywhere. So I'm really intrigued by the way that journalists of every sort are kind of finding different ways to get our work out there, right? So Maritza Felix is co-founder of something called Conecta Arizona. Mm-hmm. Actually, she was featured on ITT and on Latino USA in our political roundtable about COVID-19 and the midterm elections. And she's based in Arizona. And by the way, big news, Maritza Felix has just been honored with the 2022 Cecilia Weissman Award for Multimedia Reporters from the Medill School at Northwestern University. And of course, if you know me, you know that Cecilia Weissman was my best friend in the whole wide world. I love you, Cecilia. Wow. And so we interviewed Maritza before she had won this recognition, but now I'm connected to her because Cecilia's my girl. May she rest in
peace. Absolutely.
I know, isn't that incredible?
Love it.
So the thing that Maritza is doing right is that she talked about how journalists can reach people in their own communities really just by, I don't know, by being kind of curious and kind of the ground up. Because what did she do? She's on WhatsApp. Let's listen. The story goes that your idea around Conecta Arizona had something to do with your mom.
Yes.
And I just love that because that is so Latina of you. Just like, no, mi mamá.
When the border restrictions started in March 2020, my mom stayed on the Mexican side of the border and I stay in Phoenix with my family. And my mom, like, sends me these, like, glitter flowers memes on WhatsApp every morning. Like, good morning, mijita, buenos dias, and everything. But then she starts sending me this. Like, when the summer gets to Arizona, COVID is going to die because it dies with the heat. And it's like, no, mom, that's not what's going to happen. We don't know yet. And I was trying to do fact-checking just for her at the beginning. But then I got the same messages from different groups. And I was like, instead of, like, going back one-on-one, I'm going to create a group so I can, like, combat this misinformation in the same channel that is being spread. And that's how Connect Arizona was born in May 2020. And it was just 12 people at the beginning. And now we have a radio show. Now we have a newsletter. We have a podcast.
A lot of people are, you know, they're here at the conference and they're like, what should I do? I'm a little bit frustrated. I can't find a job. What's it going to be? And your story points to, in this moment, you have to find a way to make your journalism responsive in however you can, wherever you can. And you never know what the success is going to bring.
We were isolated. We were so tired of Netflix and watching TV and everything. We were glued to the cell phones. So where do we need to meet the community where they are? And we are in Facebook. We are in WhatsApp. And we need to tailor our content to them. We as journalists, we're so used to be providing all the time, creating and producing and everything. And we never stop and we never ask. We get paid to ask questions. And ironically, we don't ask those questions to the community that we serve.
Boom. Wow.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that one.
Dude, correcting the narrative through WhatsApp. I love it.
I mean, that one I didn't sit in for because I was doing other interviews. So I'm floored. Wow. Maritza speaks my language.
yeah.
But we know, you know, Maritza's in Arizona. And we know that Arizona is such an important state when we're talking about the political landscape of Latinos and Latinas and just organizing in general. So that brings us to another state that we love to get into the weeds of, Texas. Yeah, Texas. You know, I love Texas. I do love my people in Texas. So I was thrilled that I got a chance to talk to two amazing Latinas based in Texas. One of them is a very close friend of mine who I've known for years, and that's Arelis Hernandez, mm-hmm. Who's the Texas correspondent for the Washington Post, but also a fellow Boricua,
mm-hmm.
and Astrid Galvan, who's an editor for Axios Latino. And it was interesting because Arelis and I, you know, we've compared notes and we've talked over the years and have been following her career. And it's interesting because when she moved from DC to Texas, it was a new place for her, right? And she just opened up, was so vulnerable and real and sharing her experiences, covering different natural disasters and tragedies, including the mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas.
You want to tell the right story. I mean, like, and be respectful and give dignity to families and victims. So are you intentional about it or?
Yeah, I'm intentional and I'm often sort of humbled and terrified to do that kind of reporting. I try so hard to balance giving family space to grieve. And I've actually like been dreading talking about some of the experiences that I've had in Uvalde because like they were so hard.
I know. They were very
The hard. First person I met was a 9-year-old who was inside the school. And she just started relaying, like almost wrote, maybe in shock to some degree, what had happened.
They're going
through
trauma. You never know how they're retelling their experiences.
Right,
and you're
exactly.
There in the moment.
The early part of my career, you know, coming out of journalism school, you try not to show emotion. You do a lot of compartmentalizing. When this child started telling me what was happening and how, you know, a teacher moved them to the back of the curtain in the multipurpose room in the cafeteria to try to avoid bullets, like, I just started bawling.
Oh, my God. And that's okay. As a journalist, I mean, that's part of, I think one of the things Maria inspires me to say it's okay to wear your emotions. You're like, okay, I can do this. Like, I'm still a kick-ass journalist from the Washington Post and badass Boricua. You know, it's all good, but I'm also human.
Yeah, no, I think as the older I get, the more comfortable I'm becoming like, and just incorporating that in part of my reporting so that they know that I'm hearing them and that, like, I'm feeling it with them, even though I'm not feeling their pain exactly. You know, again, shaping my experiences reporting is allowing that to be a part of the process. And oftentimes, like, I'm quiet for a lot of my interviews to give them space to fill in the silence. And I recently had this interview with a father whose son was shot twice in the school. And there is a point at which in the interview, he just started, you know, like stream of consciousness and just didn't interrupt him. You know, I stopped taking notes. I told him, you don't have to apologize for crying or anything. Just get it out.
Now, that's really special for me because that's what we're trying to do at Futuro and here on In the Thick, which is to allow our fellow journalists to talk about what this is like. Arelis's voice is so, she didn't have to say much. You could just tell by what was happening with her voice, what kind of an impact this had. So
that's who she is. You know, I've known her. I've had the pleasure of knowing her since my Al Jazeera America days in DC, like in 2013. So I've known her for probably 9 years. A journalist with heart, like we talk about it, about how much she is more comfortable in her skin dealing with that emotion. And to me, that was a moment for me, Maria. And it's interesting because then I got to talk to Astrid, who's a badass. I was so excited to talk to Astrid because I was a big fan of her work at the Associated Press. And then she moved to Axios Latino. And I really love the work that Axios Latino is doing with their weekly newsletter. And we talked about representation and identity and how she had to fight to include marks of her own identity in her reporting. So let's take a listen to Astrid.
If at all, do you bring parts of yourself or your background into your work?
In terms of my journalism, you know, it's interesting because when you're younger, you're coming up in journalism, you're told to separate your identity from your reporting. And so I think for a long time, I was like, I don't want to be pegged as the Latina reporter. Like, I'm going to cover all the things, crime, education, and I didn't want to be categorized as just one thing. And now that I've been in this business for like 13, 14 years, I take a lot of pride in specifically covering Latino communities. Yeah. And I use my background and what I grew up being as like, it informs my storytelling.
So I started reading your work at the AP and it'd be like Astrid Galván with the accent.
Yeah.
That to me, that was like that little example of like, that's my identity. I think that's important, owning that.
Thank you for recognizing that.
We as Latinos sometimes feel like, well, we have to adapt to the mainstream when in fact, no, it's the other way around sometimes. That's your name, right? I mean, that's who you are.
Right. And you know what? I think, and I could be wrong because my memory could be fuzzy, but I'm pretty sure I started doing that at the AP. And I remember at the time, the AP didn't use accents at all. They were like, oh, it's because some of our member systems can't like read them and it messes up the copy. And I was like, no. And I was so resistant and I would sneak them into copy every single time.
Oh my God.
And I would just like
subversive.
Pray that the copy editor didn't catch
subversive
it.
Subversive accent insert. Is basically my, you've just hit one of my tenets as a bilingual journalist.
Yeah.
I love it. Slipping in an accent here or there. What a,
I love that. That was a moment.
Some revolutionary work. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's why we love so much the work that we do, right? And giving space to these journalists to talk about their work. That's why we love the NAHJ, NABJ conference. Yeah. Yes, some things happened, like you got COVID, which was not fun.
I know.
Right? And we're glad you're feeling better. But there were so many dear friends of ours. You know, our dear ITT All-Star, Terrell Germaine Starr, was there. And in the sound-off that he recorded with me, we really talked about solidarity and the importance of solidarity, even though I did not get to see Terrell in Las Vegas at the conference. But there was a lot of love. So this is also an opportunity to see some of our other favorite friends and all-stars like R.L. Nave and Natasha Alford, all of whom were there as part of this conference in Las Vegas. It was very hot and loud.
Yeah, but I actually got to see Terrell and I was so happy to catch up with him.
Oh.
So it was really special to share the space with so many inspiring people and all these conversations we just heard about how to report on the issues that matter to our communities. We're going to continue covering this because we're actually doing, insert drum roll, ready for this one, founder of Futuro Media. We're doing our first political poll ever in the history of Futuro Media this
fall.
So
exciting. Finally.
Yeah, like political geeks unite. I knew you would love that. You know what I'm saying? Because you and I are political geeks and I'm like, we need to start doing polling. But we're going to be using the results of that poll to do some great reporting for Futuro, and we'll be sharing more of that, you know, on In the Thick and Latino Rebels and other things that we do.
Well, that's so exciting, Julio. Yay for continuing to push the envelope. And you know what, dear listener? You keep us inspired. It's why we do what we do. So thank you for listening, dear listeners. See you later. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us because it really helps. And remember, you can listen to In the Thick on all major podcast platforms. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. In the Thick is produced by Noor Saadi, Harsha Nahata, and Lisa Salinas, with editorial support from Charlotte Manjin and Fernanda Santos. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Gabriela Baez. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me the music. You heard it's courtesy of Nacional Kep and ZZK Records. We'll see you on our next episode. Remember, no te vayas. And for those of you who know, yes, it was 1 week of silence with laryngitis, but my voice is back. Hasta la próxima. Bye.
The voice is back.
Peace out.
The Walton Family Foundation, working to solve social and environmental problems to improve lives today and benefit future generations. More information at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.